Okay, thank you, and thank you very much to the whole of the MAA for inviting me and giving me this platform to tell you about our story. So the title of my talk is Escher and the Droste Effect. In addition to my own name, these are two Dutch names that I will say something more about. Here is another Dutch name that you heard already, Hendrik Lenstra. So he was my supervisor at Berkeley, and I now work with him in Leiden also. And this this project started with an idea of his, well, we've been working on it for a number of years, and I'm happy to be able to show you the results here. So while I'm at it, I should thank a couple of other people. The top two here, Hans Richter and Jacqueline Hofstra, they are illustrators that that did work for us. And the other two are math students that did some programming for us. And Bruno Ernst, he's in his 80s now. He is he's the main authority on Escher's work. He knows a lot about Escher, and he also worked with Escher when Escher was still alive. Okay, so Escher is of course one of our one of our important artists. He is a graphic artist. He died in 1972. And Escher was by training, he was not a mathematician at all. He even disliked mathematics in high school. He was never good at it. But I think you can say that he was still a mathematician at heart in some way. And throughout his career, he has been in touch with several mathematicians to get ideas for his prints. So Escher always said that that his goal was not to be an artist to be judged by, you know, the usual criteria for artists. He did not try to make high art. What he was trying to do was to create a sense of a sense of amazement, a sense of a sense of wonder. And we as mathematicians have been using Escher's work to illustrate mathematical concepts. So for instance, here you see the famous Möbius band. It is a surface that has only one side. And Escher made this print, and here you're sort of led to discover this amazing property of the Möbius band. If you follow these ants around, if you start here and you sort of go around, then you find out that you find yourself here on the other side. If you go around again, then you're on the first side again. So Escher's work has been used to illustrate many mathematics books. The exchange of ideas went both ways. It was Escher who was giving ideas to mathematicians and illustrations that they could use, but he also got his ideas from mathematicians. So here you see the print that he made after he learned about the impossible triangle, and it was a mathematician, George Roger Penrose, who gave him this idea, and he had a very sort of bland-looking sketch of what the impossible triangle was, but Escher made it into this lively picture, and they also printed on T-shirts, I've seen. Okay. A lot of Escher's work is about symmetry, and a lot of it is about self-reference. So you'll see both these elements in the lecture today. This is one of the most basic kinds of symmetry. The symmetry you would find in wallpaper. So we call this a doubly periodic picture. It's periodic because you can take this picture and shift it over, and then you get the same picture again. And you can do this in two independent directions. So that is a wallpaper pattern. Okay, here you see that Escher also mixes different kinds of symmetries. Here, this whole pattern towards the middle is kind of complicated. The big symmetry is, of course, a rotation symmetry of order 3. If you do this 3 times, you've come full circle. This kind of symmetry will play an important role. Okay, let me come to the second name in my title. That is Droste. Droste is a chocolate brand, a Dutch chocolate brand, In Dutch, the word Droste effect is a word that everybody knows. It is even a word that is in the official Dutch dictionary. And what it refers to is the effect that you have when you have a picture. This is a box of coca, and the picture is itself included inside the picture on a smaller scale. So this repeating visual effect, that is what we call the Droste effect. And we've been trying to push this word into the English language, and we're very pleased that there are now some English English-speaking authors who are starting to use this word. So when I was a young boy and I was looking at this box of coca in our kitchen, I would always wonder, how does this continue? There is this nurse on this box of coca, or there's a nun, and then she's holding a tray, and there's this box again. So what would happen if I would zoom in on that box? So let's make it a little bit bigger. Then sure enough, that nun is again holding a tray, and on there you find another box. So how long can you repeat this? Well, I think we've made pretty soon you will make your first mathematical discovery here, which is that this finite amount of space, this finite screen, there are really an infinite number of nuns in here, but they're just getting smaller and smaller. Of course. Of course, we like as mathematicians, we don't like our planes to be bounded, so I'd rather think of this screen as being one small piece of an infinite plane that extends in all directions. And this big picture really extends throughout. And you'll see that there's another sequence that goes off to infinity that way, where they're getting bigger and bigger. And if you wait long enough, then each one of them is going to pass through the screen if you zoom out like this. Okay, so this is what I mean by a Droste picture. It is a picture that is scale invariant under some scaling factor. Okay. Now, Dutch may be the only language that has a word for this, an official word, but I think some of you will be familiar with this picture. It is, of course, the exact same effect. And here it is. The picture is nicely centered. The principle is exactly the same. The scaling factor is quite close. Okay, so now let me show you something completely different. This is a ship out on the ocean. It's a cruise ship, and for tourists. And if the tourists get warm, then they're on this deck. They're on this deck here, lying in the sun. They can also use the pool. There's a gift shop on this ship where they sell replicas of the ship. And so there's one person. this one person has taken this replica into the swimming pool. So these replicas are incredibly well made. and they come with a sun deck of their own. And of course. And it just so happens that there again there is a person in the pool, so you I think you're getting the picture, and so in fact when I started off saying that this was a ship out on the ocean, that was not true. It was just a ship in the swimming pool of the next bigger boat. So this is again a Droste picture. It is one picture on the entire plane that is scale invariant. But you didn't see it. You didn't see it right away because the scaling factor here is not 5 or 6 like it was in the previous two. But here the scaling factor is 300. So it really takes a while. You have to zoom for quite a while before you realize that there's this repetition. But of course, from a mathematical standpoint, it makes no difference if the factor is 5 or 6 or 300 or 1,000,000. It is still a Droste picture. It is a scale invariant picture. Okay. So here is a French example, but it is a little bit different. This is a French cheese called La Vache qui Rit, the laughing cow. So this is a round box of cheese, and these boxes are also dangling here as earrings in this cow. So the idea of the repetition is there, but of course this shape of this oval is not the shape of this circle. However, if you sort of tilt it, if you look at it from the side, then you will see that this shape may well be repeated exactly in this earring. So let's see what happens then. We have this big cheese, and it is dangling here in this earring, but it is not. It is not only smaller, but it is actually at an angle. So if I zoom in, I also have to rotate to really get the exact same picture again. So this is a little bit different from the ones that I showed before. Now we are not only zooming in, we are zooming in and rotating at the same time. So you would get this same idea if on the original Droste picture, the box of coca on the tray would be on its side. That is what happens here. So I would like to call this sort of a generalized Droste effect, where you are not only scaling, but you are scaling and rotating at the same time. Okay. So now let's get to our the main subject of this talk, which is this print. So this print is called the Print Gallery, and Escher made it in 1956. And Lenstra took a look at this print one day, and he was starting. Well, it is a bit mysterious what is going on here. Well, let's take a moment to look at this. You can enter the print gallery here and look at the prints, and then as you walk through this gallery, things get larger and larger. Things are being expanded. And here you get to our main person. He is looking at one of the prints, and as you go up here, this print sort of expands as well. So he is looking at a picture of a town, a Mediterranean town on the Isle of Malta. And Escher had been on that island in his youth, and he had sketches that he used when he made this print. It's the town of Senglia. As you go around here, you see that the houses, the buildings, they are expanding too, and until you get to this building. Amazingly, that is the building that we just entered over here. So this man is looking at a picture of a city, but the building that he is standing in is actually part of the city on the print. It's quite extraordinary. And so Lenstra was wondering, is there mathematics here? So what kind of mathematical questions can you ask about this? Well, one thing is, for instance, if you follow this line, you think of this as a straight line in a normal gallery. So why is it curved in this particular way? So what we would like to discover is, what are the laws of physics in this strange universe of Escher? What are the equations that would tell you that it has to be curved exactly in this way and not in a different way? And the other question is, look at this middle. So Escher left a hole in the middle, and he put his signature there. And here you can see that this was print number 20 out of a series of 47. You also see the date; it's 1956. But what goes on in this middle? Why is there this hole? So several authors have written about this. Hufstetter in his book Gödel, Escher, Bach. But the remarks he makes are seem esoteric to me. The mathematical question is, can you continue this picture? Can you keep going here? Or do things just get so entangled that there is no point to go on? So is there really a mathematical obstruction to filling this? Or is it simply something that Escher didn't do and you can it's perfectly feasible? So I will show you that. Let me first show you the original works of Escher that we still have access to today. So this is the stone that Escher made and that was used to print it. So the picture there is in mirror image, and he would print a series of lithographs from this, and he made a living by selling these prints. And this was before he was real famous. He had an enormous production. He was working every day from 9 to 5, making the stones and supervising the printing. Okay, here you see the first sketch, sketch number 1. There's a 1 there. And I'm going to show 4 sketches that are drawn with a normal parallel perspective. And here you see the gallery everything seems normal. Sketch number two is going to be a blow up of this area. So we zoom in by a factor of four, and here you see this this pillar of the gallery. And here here you look through the window and you see the print here already. So the next sketch is going to be a blow up of this area again by a factor of four. So now we're actually seeing what is on this print. It's this town of Senglea, drawn in a normal perspective. The buildings are straight. And the next sketch is going to be a blow-up of this area. That's sketch number four. Now, if you look at this building, you may recognize that here there's this gallery. And that is the gallery of sketch number one. So if we would blow up this again by a factor of four, we're back at sketch number one. So what Escher made in these four sketches is really very close to the animation I showed you of the boat. They fit into each other every time by a factor of four, and after four factors of four, you have the same picture back. So Escher made here in four sketches one brought the picture on the infinite plane with a scaling factor of 4 to the power 4. So that's 256. A similar factor to the one I showed you in the boat. Okay, so this is something we can understand. This is a Droste picture with a very large scaling factor. So now there's this the next ingredient. It's this strange curved grid paper, and Escher made this specifically for this project. And it is sort of a mystery how he produced this. It's quite amazing, and what you see here is that these lines they are curved, but it's still a grid paper built up from small squares. So now what Bruno Ernst writes about it in his book about Escher, and there's an English translation, The Magic Mirror of M.C. Escher. What Bruno Ernst writes is that Escher would take the squares of these straight sketches and transform them onto this curved grid. So here there's a certain section here that goes on this curved grid like this, and then he will just kind of morph these squares piece by piece onto this curved grid. And so in that way, he made this sketch. So the material from these four different zoom levels of the straight sketches all combines to this single sketch on the curved grid paper. And the fact that these straight sketches fit into each other in a cycle, each time blowing up by a factor of four, means that going around here, the whole thing will fit. So that is how Escher made it. Now, the first thing we did was we took a scan of Escher's grid paper and of Escher's final work, and we decided to sort of undo the transformation that Escher went through here. And so what we found was this. So this is a reconstructed version of the straight sketches. Here you see the gallery and the prints, and there's the man standing there. So we reconstructed the straight world. I'll call this the straight world, and the world of the actual lithograph is going to be the curved world. So this is like the animation of the boat. If you zoom in by a factor of 256, you have the same picture again. Of course, one thing you'll notice is there's this missing white spiral, and that is because there was this white hole in the middle in Escher's print. So the missing bit, that is what's here. It's also clear what you should do if you want to fill in the missing bit. Well, you have to draw a pillar here, and you can finish this picture. Here there's a piece of the picture frame missing. Well, you can just complete it. And that is what we had these two illustrators do for us. Okay, of course it's not clear if you can then sort of put everything, if you can roll it up into this curved world again. Okay, so let me take a moment to see some connections between the straight world on this side and the curved world on this side. So there's the straight grid and the curved grid. And Bruno Ernst tells us that the material, the small squares here, correspond to squares here. Another way to think about it is that you can walk a path. You can walk along this dashed red line here, and then there's a corresponding path over here. So, for instance, if you start over here and you walk around like this, or maybe I walk in the other way. Let's walk like this, and you follow along on the other side. What happens? Well, I'm going 6 units. To the left, so that's these 6, and then I go up by 6 units. But there has been a rescaling. 4 units here are now a single unit here. So I'm only going a quarter of the way up, and then I'm turning right, again going only a quarter of the way, and then I'm going down, which is so small you can't even see it. So the strange thing that you see is that here it is a closed path. You walk and then you come back where you start. But here it isn't. You start walking here and then you end up somewhere in there. Now, the picture that you see sort of behind the grid lines here and here, it corresponds. So here, if here you start on a pillar and the pixel color there is the color of the actual pillar, then you see this pillar over here. But at the end point, The pixel color should then also be the color of the pillar. So this pillar is repeated in there. And of course we know that already, because we know that the straight world is a Droste picture. So there's this pillar here, and there's a pillar in there which is 256 times smaller. So that's fine. Let's now start in a different way. Let's start on this side. And walk around like this. Then there's a corresponding path over here. Let's make it a little bigger. So I'm walking like this, and here I'm walking like this. But now I'm making it bigger again. Now I'm walking around like this. And you see that on this side, the path doesn't close. If you go around the center here, then on this side, we are ending up somewhere in there. So that means that the pillar over here is also must also be over there, and so the pixel here and the pixel here, they have the same color, and we can do this that for a path starting anywhere and find sort of the green point ends up there and the blue point ends up there, and so this is something that we actually did in the when we were first working on this project. Just count the squares. You have to count very carefully and see what the end point is on the other side. And what you find out is that this whole line is being repeated over here. So if you go from blue to red, here you go from blue to red. So actually, this whole line is being scaled down, and it is also being rotated. It's almost put entirely upside down, and you find it again over there. So there's a discovery we made here. If you make a print according to this process of Escher's, then there has to be this repetition. If there's this pillar over here, there's also the pillar over there. But it is 18 times as small if you measure this graphing paper, and it is rotated by 160 degrees. The reason that you do not see this repetition is because there's this white hole in the middle. Okay. So that is our first discovery, and it's our first important ingredient. So the 256 is the scaling factor in the straight world, but if you just measure this and compare it to this, it's a factor of about 18. So it's not the same. Yeah. Okay. So now let me say a little bit about the curved grid paper that Escher made. So what Bruno Ernst writes about this is that Escher had this idea of this cyclic expansion. You take a one here, and it's 4 times as big on the other side. And as you go around, if you've come full circle, it will be 256 times as big. So Escher noticed that if you work your way towards the middle, things don't work out very well. And it works much better if you use these curved lines. And so what does better mean? So Escher was only trying to make it look good. He had no there was nothing mathematical he was trying to optimize. He was trying to get the best picture he possibly could. So what Bruno Ernst says about this is that in this way, the original small squares could better retain their square appearance. So the idea is, I want small squares to stay small squares. Now, if you do this at an infinitesimal level, then this is something that mathematicians are very familiar with. These are called conformal transformations. So Escher was trying to make a conformal transformation that does this cyclic expansion for him. Okay, so let me show you why being conformal is so important. This is a 17th century painting of Holbein, there was something hidden in this painting, and it is this strange thing over here. You don't really recognize what it is if you look at it, or maybe somebody can guess. Yeah, so it's much easier for me if you stand over here, then it really looks like a skull. So this was the picture that is there. But this transformation is not conformal. It is stretched in one direction in a very extreme way, to the point that it's at least hard to recognize what it is. Okay. So Escher tells us, use conformal transformations and it'll give you good pictures. And so we thought, great. We have lots of good pictures. There are paintings of Van Gogh. That's actually how you pronounce his last name, Van Gogh. And we have lots of conformal transformations. So here you see the Riemann-Zeta function. So the Riemann-Zeta function is the subject of the most important open problem in mathematics. And it has zeros and poles. This is a pole, and these points are the zeros. This funny point is a critical point, the zero of the derivative. So with a very simple picture, there's lots of things you can explain about the Riemann-Zeta function just by looking at this picture. So the zeros, which look like this, they are the ones that there's an infinite sequence going out to infinity here, and the others are supposed to be on some vertical strip here. The first one is about three screens up from what I'm showing now. And the conjecture is that they are all on this vertical line. Okay, but so that's sort of a... I'm getting sidetracked. The point here is that if you use a conformal transformation, you can transform anything and you will get something where you can still recognize the details. Okay. Now, so we have these... we have two ingredients now. We know that we want conformal transformations, and we know that there is this repeating effect. So what kind of mathematics is it that applies here? Well, let's take this Land O'Lakes picture, and let's try to remove the repetition. So this circular line here is repeated as a circle in here. So let's just cut out the circle in there, and we try to glue... this side on the border that you get in here if you cut out the corresponding circle. Well, then you get a torus. So if you remove all the symmetry, then this is the picture that you get. It's a donut. So on this donut, every pixel of the Land O'Lakes image. Is in a unique place. There's no repetition anymore. That is what this thing looks like. And we have to consider this, the mathematical structure we want to consider on this is conformal structure. We can bend things, but locally we have to preserve angles. Small squares have to stay small squares. And that puts us in the category of so-called Riemann surfaces. These are Riemann surfaces of genus one, because there's one hole, and there's a lot known about that. And it is not easy mathematics, but I think it's certainly for graduate school, but it has been known for over 100 years. Okay, so here's some notation for those of you who know what complex numbers are. On this side, there is such a donut. And on this side, there is also such a donut. And we are looking at conformal maps between them. And so this this is a very rare event that there is such a conformal map. And so the full mathematical story is something we published in the notices of the AMS, so you can read the mathematical details there. But here is what you can prove. You can prove that this scaling factor, if you want it to be perfectly conformal, if you really want the grid paper to be built up from small squares, the scaling factor has to be exactly this. And it is 22 point something. And the rotation has to be by this angle. And that is the only way it could work. That is the only way you can make it perfectly conformal. Okay, so what we measured in Escher's grid paper are not exactly these values, but they are values that come quite close. And here is the computer-generated grid paper that really is the mathematically ideal solution to this. So here, small squares are really small squares. Okay, now if you compare that to Escher's grid paper, it is amazing how close Escher's paper is. And you can see that he glued on something in here. So this was his second approximation. I once got to look at the original and looked on the back, and so you can see also his first approximation, which looks a lot less like this. So as Escher was building this grid and trying to keep small squares, he was approaching the mathematically ideal solution. Okay. Now, I will not give you the formulas, but I want to give you a visual way to think about this transformation. So how do you go from the straight world to the curved world? So I want you to imagine that there is a different kind of pixel format for pictures. If you have a circle here, let's say you arrange your pixels like this. So if you have your pixels here, then you can also sort of unravel it, and these pictures land over here then. So that means that if I rotate my circle, the pixel that is over here on the left is always the pixel that is over here. If I rotate my circle, this goes up. You also see that here there is a repetition. So here I removed some pixels so that you can see where you are, and going around the circle is exactly from here to here. And this picture is really a picture of the so-called complex exponential map, if the map from this half plane to this circle. But we don't need the formulas. We only need to use that if you take this vertical line and you can wrap it around the circle, and then the whole left part of the plane sort of lands in here. And this is a good pixel format if you want to zoom in, because we always have more pixels lined up close to the middle. So if I zoom in, it means that on the left side, I'm moving my pixels to the right, and here in the circle, I'm really zooming in. So you can already see what's coming here. Here is this color purple. It's still very small here, but when it comes out, you see that it's really there. Okay, so this is like a computer graphics format that has infinite precision near the interesting point, near the center. And so this is not a new idea. Escher even knew it. So this is a picture that you see in Escher, and this one too. And it is exactly the same transformation. So if you have wallpaper and you try to put this wallpaper onto a circle, there's essentially only one way to do it, and that is this way. And in fact, this is the only conformal way to do it. Okay. So that means we can take this as a new way to sort of look at the world. If you look at a teapot through this exponential map, then you get this strange picture. And of course the center here is inside the handle. Okay. So I guess you all know this Nautilus shell. If you look at the Nautilus shell through this exponential map, you will see that this spiral just becomes a straight line. So it is this is a tool to understand something that might be complicated. The way this Nautilus shell grows, it gives you this strange curve. But if you look at it through this perspective, then this curve is just a straight line, and it's much easier to think and reason about straight lines than about logarithmic spirals. But it's equivalent. Okay, so let's use this way to look at some of Escher's pictures. So here you see the snakes, and you actually see that this pattern of rings is here. Here it becomes a wallpaper pattern. So this pattern of rings going in is in some sense it also is a Droste picture. Let's look at our original Droste picture. So the nice thing, if you start with a Droste picture and look at it in this way, is that on this side you get a wallpaper picture, a doubly periodic picture. So here you see the Land of Lakes picture. Let me just show to you what the actual wallpaper picture looks like. I'm moving it to the right, which means that I'm really zooming in. So this is our new way to look at the world. Here's this ship. It really becomes there are these infinite bands of ship and swimming pool, ship, swimming pool. And because it is a Droste picture, there is this horizontal repetition that is present. So now let's look at this the Lavache-Curie cheese. So here the symmetry was not only zooming in, but it was also rotating. So here's what happens. And so zooming in, that's a horizontal shift on this side, and rotating is a vertical shift. So if I do them both at the same time, then what I'm doing here is a diagonal shift. I'm just moving in this direction. So the vertical period is always you can normalize it to 2 pi because that's the circumference of the circle, and then because the rotation angle for this for the symmetry here was 90 degrees. It means that from here to here, you go up by a quarter of this period. So if you count 4, then you are again at the same level as the previous one. Okay. So now there's a game you can play. You can say, well, I start with a picture on this side, and that produces something here. But then if I have a picture here, I can also produce something on the right side. All I have to do on this picture is indicate what period I take to wrap around the circle. So I can take, for the usual picture, I'll take one period from this one to this one, and then you'll see a single teapot here. But if you skip one and go to the next, you take 2 teapots and wrap 2 teapots around the circle, then this is what you get. So we can also do this with Escher's picture. So if you put Escher's picture through this machine, then one period is going to be 3 snakes. But then I can also make the picture for 2 snakes, or even 1 snake. So the reason this produces nice pictures is because it's a completely conformal process. Okay, here is -2 snakes. So if you consider the number of snakes on the disk looking out, it is -2 here. Okay. Now let's look at our Droste pictures again. Here's the picture I start with, and that produces this wallpaper picture on the left. But then you can choose a different period. For instance, you can take this double period, like having 2 teapots. That is what happens here. But now there's the new thing you can do. You can also take this wallpaper and put these tiles, these rectangles, put them on the diagonal. So if I only look at the doubly periodic version, you see here that that we are now at an angle, and the tile that you have from here to here is now on its diagonal. The vertical period is the diagonal of this tile. So what happens on this side is not very spectacular. I've just taken my picture and rotated it a bit. But here, something very strange has happened. So now this this girl has become one creature with an arm here and here a head, but here's another head and another arm. So it's becoming very strange. But if you look at it through in this perspective, then it is not so strange. It is the same as before, just rotated. Okay, so what we did to complete Escher's print was we had illustrators who first made these four straight sketches, and then we fed them into this machine. So we made this this doubly periodic version of it, and that is the version that we that we then made in high resolution with all the grayscale. So here you see his hair. This is a single tile of a wallpaper picture that corresponds to this. So once you have this wallpaper picture, you can complete the missing spiral. You can all that happens here is that you shift to the right. That's zooming in. And so here you can see the completed animation. So these parts of the city are new because they were missing. They were in the missing white spiral. Here you see that Escher actually used his own prints in this print gallery, and we had to add one on the left, and we thought, well, great, we add the Möbius band, a favorite of all mathematicians, and the illustrator Jacqueline, she called me at some point and she said, it is impossible, we cannot do it like this. And I said, why? What is the problem? And she said, well, Escher only made the Möbius band 3 years after he made print gallery. Okay, so the transformation to the curved world, on the left side, it really consists of taking this rectangle and putting it on its diagonal. So here it is just a rotation, but this is what happens on the in this curved world. So here you see now the same picture now with the completed middle. And let me just zoom in. So here was this white hole, and I'm zooming in and I'm rotating at the same time with the right amount. Here you see the man standing again, so he is this factor 22 and a half times smaller and rotated by 160 degrees, and there he is again. And so all the stuff that is sort of outside here, that is everything that was added by our illustrators. The Möbius band, this piece of the picture frame, these buildings here of the city, that is the new stuff. So this is the completion of the hole in the middle. And of course, if you're doing mathematics and you've solved the problem, you always take a step back and you say, well, what did we really use? What are the other things we could have done? Well, You can choose this in this wallpaper picture. You can choose any period in any direction and use that to roll up the whole picture into by the exact same process. So this is if I make the spiral go around in the other direction, or this is if you take such a double period. So all these pictures are generated out of the same tile, the same wallpaper picture. And for every choice of a period in this wallpaper picture, you get something like this. You always get a picture that has its own symmetry. So these pictures all have the symmetry of the picture I showed with the laughing cow. You have to scale by a certain factor, rotate by a certain angle, and then the picture repeats. So there's this whole sort of world of other pictures that you can make in the exact same way. For us, it has been a very nice project because we would just program this and we would have no idea beforehand what it would look like. So we were quite amazed when we saw all this. Here's another. This is like having minus one snake. There's a man here looking at the picture, but the picture is outside the picture frame rather than inside. So he's looking at a picture and you see the boat on the picture. There's more on this picture. There's this city, And then after a while, you see again that on this picture, there's actually a man, again, looking at a picture, which again is outside the picture frame. Okay, so these kind of surprising pictures we sort of got for free. So let me let me show you one more animation to see how the straight world and the curved world are now connected. So this is the straight world for the Land O'Lakes picture, and it corresponds to this wallpaper picture. Now what I want to do to get to the curved world is take the wallpaper picture and rotate it. But there's one rule. We have to have this vertical period 2 pi at all times, otherwise there is no corresponding picture on the right. So how do I rotate a wallpaper picture keeping the vertical period? Well, you can do it by making these red cuts. So I'm making a cut here, and what I will allow myself to do is to slide the material along the cut. So on this side, I'm rotating these strips, and I'm rotating them independently so that I keep this vertical period. So on the left, I'm just rotating these strips, and on the right, you see what happens as you go from the straight version to the curved version. So let's see what that looks like in Escher's picture. I make the cut, and so what's going to happen is that this is a picture frame, and inside there's another picture frame, which is 256 times smaller. I'm going to cut open this picture frame, and this will be pushed onto the bottom half of the picture frame that is inside there, that is 256 times smaller. So there it goes. It is pushed in, and all this material is sort of dragged in, and at some point it will fit again. So at some point it will say click, and then you have Escher's curved picture. Okay, so here you really see that on the left side, this is a very simple transformation. You cut these strips and you rotate them. On the right side, it is quite complicated. And I think that is what we always try to do in mathematics, certainly in pure mathematics, is we try to find the right perspective. We try to find a way to look at things that makes it all easier. And so if you look at logarithmic spirals, or if you look at this picture, it becomes a lot easier if you use this perspective. Just to show that you can use these cuts to go through this whole this vast collection of all sorts of other pictures by making these cuts in different ways and moving around. So every time that the picture fits, that you can get rid of the cuts, you have your own scaling and rotation symmetry. And if it fits, then you can make the cut again in a different place to move to a different picture. Okay, so that is what I wanted to show you. Thank you for your attention.